WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
135 photojournalists died or disappeared while covering the wars in Indochina, Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. The 1997 book Requiem collects some of the extraordinary pictures they gave their lives for. The book was edited by two photojournalists who were wounded in Vietnam, Tim Page and Horst Voss. Page is an English freelance photographer who first started taking pictures of war in Southeast Asia at the age of 18. He was wounded four times while covering the war in Vietnam. Horst Voss is a Pulitzer Prize-winning German photographer. He was the Associated Press's chief photographer in Southeast Asia from 1962 to 74 and is now the AP's senior editor in London. Page and Voss knew many of the photographers represented in the book Requiem. My first question was for Horst Voss. Did you ever try to talk an AP photographer out of going to a certain place?
Oh, yes, many times. I mean, I myself spent about 50% of my working life in Vietnam in the field. That means I would go out 4 or 5 days and then stay in Saigon 4 or 5 days and play the editor for the others and then go out myself again and leave another photographer at the editing desk. We took turns, so we all had our experiences there. I, being a little bit on the senior side already in these days, I was 30 and older, so older than many of the young colleagues, including my friend Paige. I tried to warn people. I tried to instill to them that they shouldn't go with bad troops. They should rather pull back and take care of themselves and look out for photos when situations became dicey, and never ever be foolishly risking chances.
What are bad troops?
Bad troops are the troops that don't take care of themselves. Marines that don't dig in. Patrols that don't put out points, companies that go through the jungle in single file without having flanks out, troops that handle their weapons sloppishly, artillery observers that don't check out the terrain properly, and so on.
Did you find that when you traveled with troops, that they looked after you, or did they see you as a burden, you know, someone who's not a member of the military who's tagging along?
That was one of the main features of a good combat correspondent, combat photographer, not to be a burden to the troops. It started with being equipped and dressed like soldiers. It means you had to have the right boots and you have to have your own overnight gear and you have to carry your own food. The only thing you don't carry is your weapon. You had to protect yourself with a steel helmet and a flak jacket, just like they did. And when there was danger, you could not count on them putting a shield around you and defending you. You know, you had to just run with them and hope for the best. But it was not our role to participate in the fighting. On the other side, among the communist photographers, that was their prime role. They were soldiers foremost and reporters, propagandists, or photographers secondary.
When you were photographing combat, what kind of rules of thumb would you use to know when to take pictures and when to just run for cover?
I think it's a cross purpose. You learn where you can. It's a sixth or seventh nature. You learn where you can take pictures from and be safe simultaneously. You learn how to move. Where to position yourself, you learn how to shoot on the run, and this is without the advantage of today's all thinking and singing camera and autofocus. You learn to anticipate, you learn to try to sort of preempt what's going to go on and where you can place yourself. It becomes a sixth or seventh sense in the end. You just automatically know where, you know that a rubber tree won't stop a bullet, so you don't hide behind a rubber tree. Admittedly, the opposition can't see you behind the rubber tree, but stray weaponry will come through that rubber tree.
Horst Foss, earlier we were talking about your responsibility as an editor at the AP. I'm wondering, when a reporter who worked with you at the AP died, what it was like for you to develop their last rolls of film, if you were able to find film on their bodies or in their cameras after their death?
Well, that's very, very difficult to say. I mean, of course, you hope that there is something on this camera that would be worthwhile to be sent out and be a last testimony to a man's talent that wrote a very important chapter in the history of photojournalism in this century. When a man died, we looked back at his work and we tried to assess what he had achieved and what he had done in his lifetime. The last roll of film was simply like the last paragraph of a story. Of course it's sad, and of course it's everybody comes and looks at it and tries to understand what happened. There's a picture of a young Indian who traveled via Singapore. He desperately wanted to be a reporter, photographer with the AP. He lived only 14 days. When he was on his last military mission, he was up front at the point of a company and on a patrol, and a mine blasted into the company. He didn't have the experience to know that one mine seldom comes alone, so he stood up and photographed American medics helping dying soldiers. While he took his last six, seven, eight pictures, a second mine exploded and cut him down, standing up at the time and taking these pictures. So I remember very well his last roll. There were 18 negatives. And the last picture shows clearly that he stood and that he took a picture that he went out there to take, combat, that is. The picture almost explained his death. These last 18 negatives, I remember, were sent on orders from headquarters to the then general manager president of the AP was a very detailed explanation how Charlie Chalapa died. Our president wanted to know how it happened again that an AP man died. What could we do better to prevent the repetition of this? Well, there was no answer to my report because nothing was done wrong except that the man shouldn't have stood up after a first mine. So here, the last pictures were telling the tale, and as it happens, they are about the only pictures that are remembered of Charlie Chalapa, one of which is published, his last picture indeed, and published in our book, together with my slightly apologetic message to President Wes Gallagher, why Charlie Chalapa died.
Photojournalists Horst Foss and Tim Page recorded in 1997 after the publication of their book Requiem. We'll continue the interview in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. April 30th is the 25th anniversary of the fall of Saigon. On this archive edition, we're hearing from artists who help us understand the war through books, movies, sculpture, and photographs. Let's get back to our interview with photojournalists Tim Page and Horst Foss, recorded in 1997 after they edited a collection of pictures by photojournalists killed while covering the war in Southeast Asia. Horst Foss, you were wounded in Vietnam. What was your wound and what impact did that have on your life, your work, your commitment to war photojournalism?
Well, I was wounded in December 1967 by a big rocket fragment that tore through my legs. And thanks to an American medic who somehow pulled me back, and thanks to a tank driver who moved forward and loaded me and brought me back to some clearing, and thanks to a helicopter pilot who came in and picked me up together with some other wounded, and thanks to surgeons who decided not to cut off my leg as I intended to do first, I was aware that I was on the way to recovery 4 or 5 days later. And the only decision I made at that time was not to go to Honolulu or New York or anywhere, but to stay in Vietnam. One reason being that I had total trust in military surgeons who were dealing with these problems day in, day out. And secondly, I tried to avoid having my legs broken again at the New York head office and being made a photo editor at headquarters, because that would have ended the great days of photography. Being in Vietnam and being around a major story of the time was always a great shot of adrenaline. And put it frankly, we enjoyed ourselves much of the time.
Well, Tim Page, I believe that you were injured and returned to combat more times than any other photojournalist in Vietnam.
I was hit 4 times, in 1 train wreck and 1 motorcycle wreck and 1 car wreck. After 3 woundings, 2 of them relatively minor, I mean, in combat or out in the field. The third time was fairly serious when the American Coast Guard cutter shot up by American planes, and about 400 pieces of shrapnel in my body. At that point, Time Life paid for me to leave the country, and I was given a contract to work out of the Paris office and cover the 6 day war and other conflicts in the West. But I had to go back in 68 during the Tet Offensive, just after the Tet Offensive. I couldn't stand there and watch the Tet Offensive go on, as it were, live on television and seeing the pictures in Life magazine and all my buddies and friends' pictures being used, and I'm sitting in Los Angeles, thumb up my bum and mind in neutral. And I took a one-way ticket back to Vietnam, arriving just in time for the second Tet Offensive, when the press corps lost about 8 people in 3 days. And instantly, I arrived with 50 cents in my pocket, and within 4 days, I had 6 pages in Life magazine. It was something was bigger than we were. I mean, speaking from the freelance point of view, it was the war to be in. And providing you went out enough and got towards where it was hitting the fan, then you could guarantee getting decent spreads into magazines and sell your images, be it to AP or UPI or to one of the other agencies, or you would have a commission for an assignment to one of the major magazines. And that's what you're being paid for, or you were trying to break into that world so you became a known photographer.
Tim, what was the last wound that you got in Vietnam, and why did you stay?
I didn't stay. I mean, on the last wound, I took a piece of shrapnel in my brain, and they took out of my brain 200, about the size of an orange, 200 cubic centimeters of brain, which left me paralyzed, hemiplegic on the left side for over a year. When I was brought out of the field by helicopter and on the way to the next medical post, I was declared dead, and they had to jumpstart my heart a couple of times. And the hemorrhage at the point when they started to open my head up, as I said, got to the size of a large orange. And I was dead at that time, so I'm told. I mean, I can't actually recall much about that, to be quite honest.
How good has your recovery been?
It's a bit of a limp. I don't know if you ever really recover from something like that. You always, you recover physically. I mean, I've been back to Vietnam 27 times. I was there this year for 3 or 4 weeks. But my agility has always been impaired since. Mentally, I suppose it gives you the strength to go on and do other things, maybe something like this project. I mean, one can only say that, with the grace of God go I. I mean, one is alive, and you can't sit and somehow weep and gnash and wail about that dilemma in the past. It's over.
Horst Voss and Tim Page recorded in 1997 after the publication of Requiem, a book they edited featuring the work of photojournalists who died covering war in Southeast Asia. Coming up, Oliver Stone on serving in Vietnam and making the war movie Platoon. This is Fresh Air.